NVIDIA, with its GPUs and its CUDA software ecosystem, has between 70 and 95% of the world AI chip market. If AI is going to thrive, we need a wider ecosystem of both hardware and software. And the question I give to you today is, how? I'm Jeremy Bennett. Today, we're going to give you a step on the answer using open source. I hope that you come away from this with an understanding of how you can have a new chip design for AI, and you can bring up the software ecosystem you need so that you can run all your favorite AI systems. I'm joined by my colleague William Jones, who will take you through the practical real world of this. I'm going to give you an overview to start. We're focusing on neural networks, and I am fully aware that neural networks is not the whole of machine learning and AI, but it's the big one. The way all systems work is the neural networks represented as a graph, and the software, whether it's PyTorch, TensorFlow, or whatever you're using, may do a bit of graph-level transformation to make the graph a bit more efficient, but fundamentally sits there walking over that graph, looking at the nodes, and the nodes tell it what the arguments are, the tensors, the glorified matrices, which are the data, and what the operation to perform is, whether it's an add or a matrix multiplication or a convolution. And they sit in a world that is a host and accelerator-based system. The host may be an x86 today. The accelerator almost certainly, unfortunately, is NVIDIA. Not because NVIDIA's bad, but because they've got 90% of the market. And the dispatcher sits in there and works out which of those to run on. Do I run on the host? Do I run on the accelerator? Or do I run across both of them? And we're focused particularly today on the dispatcher and how it decides and makes that decision, pushes software onto the accelerator. And that works for microcontrollers and standard software, PyTorch, TensorFlow, you've got ExecuTorch, you've got LightRT, and it's probably handling single nodes off to be accelerated by a special accelerator, and it's probably only doing that with some operations. But it goes right up to huge coprocessors, and we've worked on both these scenarios. We work on the ExecuTorch. We work on one of these, which is a RISC-V chip, which has more than 1,000 cores on it. And in this case, the dispatcher's got to work out how to get across all those cores. It's probably trying to handle multiple operations at one time, postponing delivery of results and so forth. So William's now going to talk you through a real open source example. William is my head of AI. He is also responsible for the UK's national guidelines on best practice in AI for the electronic systems industry. William, will there now be a brief pause while we change over the microphone? Clip that on, and I'll find which pocket I put the thing in.
Cool, is the audio okay? Yes, so the project I want to talk you through is a student project that we've been doing for the last 4 or 5 months, I think. So every year we do a student project with Southampton University in the UK, and we host a set of their master's students to do some sort of relevant industrial project to sort of help them along their degrees. And this year we had 6 students for 10 weeks, and we asked them to go away and integrate, well, go through the process and create a demonstrated project of integrating a new accelerator into the PyTorch framework. And in particular, by the way, we were hoping to have pictures of the students up here, but we didn't get that sorted in time, so we just have their names. They deserve a lot of credit because this was an incredibly good project. So particularly what we wanted to do with this project is we asked the students to bring up a RISC-V core as the accelerator on an FPGA of their choice. We asked them to go into PyTorch and create a new device in PyTorch and modify the dispatcher to dispatch to this device. But we also, most importantly, asked them to go away and create a tool chain between the two that would let this dispatcher dispatch to any hardware and sort of work in a hardware-agnostic way. And this is in many ways the tricky bit. And in terms of the slides that Jeremy put up earlier, we're sort of looking at this bottom bit here. The students have to go in, they have to modify the dispatcher in PyTorch and create a tool chain to connect it to it's an accelerator, but it's obviously not much of an accelerator because it's just a RISC-V core, because the ultimate goal of this is just a demonstrator. And the sort of end goal of this for the students, or their stretch goal at the end, was to try and get ResNet 18 working on this RISC-V core as an accelerator. Now, we asked the students to do this with the OneAPI ecosystem and the OneAPI construction kit. So if you haven't met this is a construction kit that's largely based on the efforts of SICL and OpenCL that implements a model of heterogeneous computing. And the way that this would work and the way that we were expecting the students to solve this project, actually they did something a little bit different, is that they would go to PyTorch, they would modify the dispatcher in PyTorch to dispatch to this new piece of hardware for the operations that they cared about, the ResNet 18 ones. They would provide SICL implementations. I think this was going to be add, batch norm, and convolution 2D. And then with the SICL compiler, which is the DC++ compiler, in the OneAPI construction kit, they would they'd produce a multi-architecture binary. They'd have the code on the host that is driving what is happening and the code on the accelerator, which is obviously like actually what is doing things. And this multi-architecture binary would call out to the OpenCL API, which would implement this heterogeneous computing. And in the OneAPI construction kit, there is an extremely generic and simple implementation of this OpenCL API, which calls out to a sort of a really basic low-level hardware abstraction layer, which just sort of defines, like, I think, six functions, which sort of define writing to the device, reading from the device, and things like this. And the scope of the student project was essentially they'd have to go in, they'd have to do a little bit of work on the producing the multi-architecture binary and probably a bit more work on the hardware abstraction layer, and then they'd be able to go through this, demonstrate it could all work, stitch everything together, be a nice project. And ultimately, the end goal of this, if the students had time, or if we were doing this for a real project, because this is how, you know, this is a valid way for us to approach a project like this. SICL is a very mature tool chain for doing this type of thing. You know, you start with this generic simple implementation of OpenCL and you develop something more target specific and rich over time. Now, our students actually ended up doing something a little bit different to this. About 4 weeks into the project, the students came to us, and I think they felt they were running out of time a little bit. It's a tough thing to get done in 60 engineer weeks when you're still fresh students who haven't done this type of thing before. And they basically said, look, we think we can do this in an even quicker and simpler way, which gives us an even better chance of success. And we were very proud of them for doing this. It's not easy to have conversations like this with your sort of friendly industrial customer at the best of times. And they did a really good job of not just explaining what they needed, but what their proposed solution to the problem was. And what the students ended up doing is they ended up sort of writing a micro hardware abstraction layer that sort of sidestepped quite a lot of what we'd originally expected them to have to do. So the flow that I described before, how we were expecting them to solve the problem, was that there would be implementations of stuff to happen in SICL. The DC++ compiler would take the OpenCL library and compile this down to this multi-architecture binary where things would happen. And this multi-architecture binary containing these calls to the OpenCL API would drive how things happened. But what the students did is they just wrote a sort of, instead of going through this whole process and implementing this whole hardware abstraction layer and way of interfacing with the hardware through this ecosystem, they just wrote a little interposer in the OpenCL library that captured the sort of two calls that they were actually interested in dealing with, which are the set arguments for an operation and do an operation calls. And they just captured those and then went away, dispatched to the hardware on their own, and got the results back. And this was like, it was a really good solution to what we'd asked them to do. And in many ways, it was better than what we'd asked them to do, or it was a better demonstrator because it's even more minimal than what we'd originally expected. And that is what this was supposed to be, a sort of minimum viable demonstrator. In a bit more detail, because their solution was interesting sort of in more detail than this, the students actually ended up using TCP to implement the communication with their FPGA accelerator. And it was quite a nice little system. The students ended up using this Xilinx Zinc board as their FPGA host of the RISC-V core. This is actually one of these FPGA boards that comes with a little processing system on it. It had a few ARM cores and it had a few peripherals, and it meant that the students were able to sort of just like almost overnight set up a TCP communication with it and use that to offload things to the core. Now, like, obviously, this isn't a realistic thing that you do with sort of a real chip. You'd probably try and use PCIe or something, but it was a good demonstrator. And it meant that the flow for the students' work was that they had these SICL implementations of ResNet operations. Their OpenCL interposer would capture the arguments and the data from these. It would send them through TCP to the FPGA board. FPGA board's processing system would put this into shared memory. The shared memory would be operated on by the RISC-V core. The result put back into shared memory, and everything sent all the way back. And yeah, it's a really nice, elegant solution that the students came up with for solving this problem. And it actually it sidesteps one of the issues with sort of doing things the way we originally proposed a few slides back. In this way of doing things, the building up things via a sort of simple, very basic hardware abstraction layer that's provided in the construction kit, you actually end up compiling your whole program for your RISC-V core down, sending that to the accelerator and executing it there. With the solution the students propose, you don't have to do that. You can just send the data, which is a nice improvement. So in terms of the overall success of the project, to sort of sum up, we set the students with the task of creating a minimum viable product of basically integrating a new piece of hardware and a tool chain with an AI accelerator framework, which was PyTorch. And we asked them to see if they could get ResNet 18 working. So obviously, they achieved what we'd asked them to do in getting a demo to work. That was fantastic. All of this is available freely. Well, if not now, will be shortly available free and open source after their work has been marked by their examiner. So they've achieved that. They very nearly got ResNet 18 working as well. We initially wanted to get the sort of three dominant operations in ResNet 18 working, which were AND, batch norm, and 2D convolution. The students got AND and batch norm done very, very well, and didn't quite finish off convolution 2D by the time they had to stop working and write up. They got a very long way away, very long way along finishing that, so that was very good. And I spoke earlier about making a hardware-agnostic solution as well, so that they'd be able to basically substitute out any piece of hardware for any other piece of hardware that was also supported by the SICL frontend that we designed. And that worked as well. The students initially started working with, I think, the Xilinx MicroBlaze 5 core for their FPGA, a RISC-V core that Xilinx provide that does actually work particularly well with their FPGA. And they were able to demonstrate that by sort of just substituting out for a new piece of hardware and swapping out for even something with a completely different instruction set, things still basically worked out of the box. It was very good. And the students deserve a lot of praise for the work they've done. Anyway, I think I'm now handing back to Jeremy to finish off. Noted.
So William's just described to you that we're not talking about theory, this is practical. We were able to talk about this one, it was a student project. We do this commercially for real customers as well. And that work is all freely available for you to use as a starting project. And I think it says something that six students in 10 weeks who had no previous exposure to AI software and infrastructure were able to bring that up successfully. So how do you do it? And let's look at what we mean by AI. And there is a pyramid problem here. We've all played with ChatGPT, millions of people have in the world, or these days DeepSeek. There's a lot of professional engineers. This is actually the big revolution in AI, is people using standard models to make businesses run better, get rid of the drudgery, helping the lawyers find all their cases automatically, helping people buying homes find all the legal documents they need automatically, automating all the paperwork you need if you live in England and want to take a lorry load of goods into Europe. That's where the big revolution is. actually the number of people developing models much smaller, people developing ResNet 18 and all the new models, that's a small one. And sitting on the top are people like us who actually develop the AI tools. And it's not just people, some of that development is itself done by AIs. So how do you get involved? ExecuTorch is part of PyTorch. LightRT, what used to be called TensorFlow Lite for Micros, is part of TensorFlow, and they've got their official tutorials. These slides will all be on the, are already on the FOSDEM site, so you'll get the links. SQL and OpenCL is already in PyTorch 2.4, so you don't have to write the implementations. You've got implementations already available. The OneAPI construction kit, it's freely available on CodePlay's GitHub. That work that's done in Southampton and other work we're doing elsewhere, we're turning into some more of our how-to, and I know many of you will have used our how-tos before. They're coming this year. And ultimately, it's what we do for our day job. So if you'd like to do more and you want some help, come and ask us. We'll be here, William and I are here all day, and we're at the AI Plumbers Conference tomorrow as well. So thank you all very much. I asked a question at the beginning. How do we get AI working on new hardware? And I hope we've given you a bit of insight into how that can be done. And I think we have a minute or two for a few questions. Thank you.